This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 690, brought to you by Mack Weldon. Use the promo code iFanboy for 20% off your first order, and iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 690. That's a big round number. Josh and I both realized this week.
At 700, can we change the name of the show?
Sure. We'll get a branding company on it, and
there you go.
We'll call it like the POW.
What did Netflix change their name to? Remember that they changed their they rebranded for a day.
They rebranded just the physical side to something.
I can't remember
what it was. But yes, it was just the physical discs. They were something else completely dumb. Anyway, I'm Connor Kilpatrick. That's Josh Blanigan. We have thoughts about Netflix.
We had a talk about how we weren't going to go off the rails, and that was the soonest and deepest I've ever done it.
We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, even if it's a holiday in the middle of the week, and you got to deal with your kids and your fireworks and your angry neighbors and movies and all kinds of things. We get it done, though. We call it the best book we read, the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books of the week, the patron pick, maybe some listener mail if we have time. We'll try to make some time this week. We'll have fun. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show, so there'll be some spoilers. So caution yourself. And Josh, you had the pick of the week.
I did have the pick of the week. Also, I want to add, we get it done, though.
Yeah.
To our regular slate of I don't know the word I want to say here. So the old, pick of the week is Old Man Quill, number 7. Which dovetails nicely with a conversation we just had off air, which I just realized as I was saying it out loud.
That's true.
About the old man and the gun.
Right,
so maybe that's a thing. I was pretty deep into my books this week. It was not a huge week, but I had a respectable little stack.
It depends on because the patron pick changed that for me, but we'll get to that when we get to the patron pick.
Sure. That's you made a choice. That based on their choice. It doesn't matter. So I was probably near the end of everything I had to read, and I was like, I don't really have a pick yet. And I thought for a second, I was like, I guess it'll be the patron pick, which we'll get to. There's reasons that you could say that, but then I started reading Old Man Quill. And for those of you who remember, Old Man Hawkeye by the same writer of this, Ethan Sachs, was a favorite of ours for a while. Every issue that came out was fun, and every issue that followed was almost more fun than the last one. It had a very like an improving quality to it. And when Old Man Quill came out, we both read the first one. I don't think you went any further.
No, I didn't.
It wasn't quite the same. But over the course of this series, we're on issue 7 now. It's not as good. It's not the same thing, but I also have I love Hawkeye as a character. It has gotten a lot better, and it's gotten a lot clearer about what's going on. I think at first it it was almost a little hard to distinguish it from whatever the regular Guardians book that came out that very right. week, I think. But there were a couple of things in this that I really liked. Again, as with Old Man Hawkeye, when he started really digging into different parts of Marvel, as they went through that world, that was sort of the most fun part. And so, you know, on this, the second page, we get a Willy Lumpkin. And I was like, all right, I'm paying attention right away. And so when you start off, you're in the Midwest somewhere, and the Baxter Building has fallen down and it is in ruins, not unlike the Star Destroyer in The Force Awakens. And it is on top of a giant decomposed Loki skeleton. Oh. And they've got to go in there. So we got the Guardians here. You got Drax, Manta, Quill, Rocket, and Gamora. No Groot. Apparently he talked too much and somebody killed him. And they got to go in there and they got to get the Ultimate Nullifier. I forget why, honestly. To stop the threat. That's basically behind everything, to stop the threat.
It's like a MacGuffin situation. It's like the Maltese Falcon. They have to get the Ultimate Nullifier.
There you go. Willy Lumpkin comes out. Says you shouldn't go in there, and they realize he's a hologram. That's sort of the systems are still running. But right away, I was like, "Oh, that makes me feel something. That's pretty good." They go in. They're finding their way around. Herbie wakes up, and becomes their sort of guide as all the Molloids come up from underground and try to kill them all. And there's a sort of a really fun big action scene as they're fighting their way out. And there's a bit where like they find a helicopter and they're like, can we get out? And you know, Herbie's like, it runs, but you can't leave and it's broken. He's like, oh, we're not flying, and uses the helicopter to chop up all the Molloids, which is pretty gross, but you know, like it's just a big crazy action scene kind of thing.
Yep.
And then this is the spoiler, by the way, it's coming now. At the very end, you realize that Quill had gotten a message that said from the other Guardians, who had not spoken to in a long time, that said, you have to go get the Ultimate Nullifier. This is really bad. And then they all get wiped out, and you come back to him, and he's been hallucinating them the whole time. They're all dead.
So there are no other Guardians.
There are no other Guardians. It's just Peter Quill standing there with a busted-up Herbie and a gross Molloid blood-covered axe. And I was like, you got me.
It's real good.
It's just good comics. You know, we keep coming back to this as we keep going on, like what it is we want out of these things. And at first it was like, I want you to make me feel smart and impress me. And now I'm like, I just want to like reading comics. That's all I want out of it.
I want to have fun.
I do. I really just want to have fun. And, you know, old comics delighted and surprised you. And every time that a superhero comic book does that now, regardless of sort of how perfect it is in every other way, I walk away with a good feeling.
Right.
And that's where I was with this. And of all the books that I read this week, as soon as I got to the last page, I was like, oh, that's pick of the week. And I was glad for it because it wasn't in a big event. It wasn't a number one. It's just a fun comic book. And I love
that feeling, though.
Yes,
when you get that moment, you're just like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, so you know, like it's gotten better as the series has gone through. I remember, you know, Ethan Sachs came out. That's not what I mean.
He hit the scene.
His name appeared as a comic creator. I think he was a journalist previously or whatever.
Yeah, he was. He was a long time like New York Daily News entertainment person. Like he was a long time entertainment. And I've gone back and he used to write all the comic articles, like anytime the mainstream news broke in about comics, he would write the article for Daily News. So he was like a longtime New York entertainment writer guy.
And he, you know, right away, that Old Man Hawkeye series was great and it kept getting better. And to an extent, like, wow, this person's really got their shit together. And I had hopes for this series too. And it's just very pleasing to me that even though it wasn't, you know, it didn't nail me right away at first. Like as I've kept writing, I've appreciated that I stuck with it, and I'm glad about that.
Well, what's interesting is that that's a big twist for Seven. Is it a 12 issue miniseries?
I'm not sure.
I assume so, for no other reason than the last one was. But that's a big that means there's a lot left.
So well, that happened in Old Man Hawkeye too.
Yeah, but. So now I'm actually curious to read it. I might read it.
You know, I think was it Marco Cecchetto had drawn most of the last series, and then they erroneously took him off the last issue so he could go do Daredevil. Yeah. Robert Gill does these. It's not like amazing work, but it's serviceable. It's not one of those books that I've been reading, and go, God, why did they hire this person? It works pretty well. The whole art team is appropriate and the coloring strong, and it's just a fun superhero comic book. And because it's not wrapped up in any of the other things going on, just like the original Old Man Logan or whatever, they can just tell their story and they can reference the stuff. And I mean, I think we learned before that this writer is of our time and age. So, that's also got something to do with it. Context wise, he's ticking boxes for us that, if you're a younger comic reader or maybe even an older comic reader, you're not going to have exactly the same reaction to it. So there is that involved. It's good. It was good stuff.
I'm downloading all of them right now.
All right. Sorry to ruin it for you.
No, it's fine. I'm looking forward. I mean, that's a great twist. I respect the twist.
And it was one of those, I went back to read it. Like, I didn't reread it, but like, I went back and was like, wait, what just happened? And it wasn't that it was poorly executed. It was just that it was shocking. Like, wait, they can't, no, they are.
That's good. Stuff. I like it.
Cool.
We had a big, actually a lot of number ones this week. Yeah. In fact, everything we're talking about in the next segment is number one. My voice just cracked. Most of the books this week and the whole show are number ones, actually. Lois Lane, number one. Greg Rucka, Mike Perkins.
And Mike Perkins.
I can't say it in my head without saying it like that.
Sure.
So this is one of those books that came out of, or it's coming out of the Leviathan event that was teased in that special that was Pick of the Week a while back. And I think if there's a book that Greg Rucka was born to write, it might be this one.
And I'm not wrong here, and I know that this is a ridiculous question. Mike Perkins was the... He was not the main artist. That was Steve Epting on Captain America. He was the backup guy.
Mike Perkins was a Marvel guy, and I don't remember exactly which books he was.
He was the one he did the non-Steve Epting issues of Captain America, of Rubiger's Captain America run.
Could be.
I think that's it.
And he's good, except the only real problem I had with this book is that, like, her face wasn't consistent, and that always bugs me. Sometimes it wasn't even close. Just completely different. Clearly different models that he was using for the faces.
Okay, yeah, I can kind of see that.
But otherwise, he's good. He's a very interesting style that's not like anybody else that I read.
It seems less smooth than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I were to go pick up my big old Captain America omnibus over there, I think you'd see. I think it was trying to be more of a piece with what Epting was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is a little different.
So Lois is on her own. As we've known in the book, she's been sort of off writing in a hotel. She's writing, she quickly writes an article attacking the president for his border policies. So it's very modern day.
Mm-hmm.
And then calls on the question to help in a all the president's men-esque scene. And then the big reveal at the end is that it's not Vic Sage, it's Renee Montoya, who I guess is also the question.
Well, yeah,
makes sense. Nothing matters.
That's Rucka's fault.
Nothing. That didn't happen in New 52.
Did it not?
None of those stories happened.
Oh.
That was all pre-continuity. Who cares? DC makes no sense whatsoever. But I also liked the examination of, there was a sort of a throwaway thing that happened in the Superman books where she was photographed kissing Superman, and so now she's sort of being slut-shamed. Because everyone knows she's married to Clark Kent, and Clark can't do anything about it, and that's really, burns him up because he's Superman. He wants to be able to help.
I really liked that it's a 3-page sequence in there where they're all together, and it creates a lot of problems. Really, I think that it would just make everybody say, hey, that guy does seem a lot like Superman. It seems like it would be more likely, so it's kind of playing with...
If you took the glasses off...
It's kind of playing with logistical fire, really. I mean, like, you can't change the fact that he's, what, 6'4"? 2-6, he's...
Yeah. I like this issue.
I mean,
it was very Greg Rucka tropey, but
it,
I also...
Yeah, it was. I wanted to like it more than I did, because, a few years ago, I think this would have totally been my bag. I think I felt a little bit that... Listen, I know that we are going through some pretty horrendous social issues right now, but it was a little on the nose while we're still in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like to read the headlines coming into my sort of serialized fiction that is current, which I don't think is a fair criticism. Mm-hmm. I just think it's something I don't like so much because it takes me out of it. And it makes me think, all right, well, this writer's trying to make a point instead of telling a story. And they should sometimes, but because the thing is so fresh right now, it's like, you know, during, I mean, the endless Middle Eastern wars or whatever, but like movies that were coming out about war while the war was still going on was weird. Like
you need the perspective of history a lot.
Right. We don't have any conclusion to make yet. And so then the only conclusion that we're making is that this is wrong and she's fighting to make it right. But I know that already, I guess. I think, has Rucka, Christ, has he been writing comics at all lately?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, so maybe I'm just not haven't been used to it. But there's a long time where I was like, "Oh, that guy's my favorite writer," and so I wanted to get a little more out of it. I think I really like Lois Lane. She's had a we keep talking about Superman's resurgence, but I think that she's had a real resurgence too. She's been given a real character part. I don't think she's ever been necessarily a damsel in distress, but she's been a really good character over the past few years between the Superman books, between her bits in Tom King's Batman Wedding Story, you know, and there's been sort of different views of her and things like that. So it's a good book to have. I'm not going to not read it.
Yeah, I liked it. I'm not really sure I know there's an overall thing here with the question and her, you know, trying to get some information about this Russian journalist who goes missing, but. Like, is that the 12-issue story? What's the overarching story here? I'm not sure, and that's kind of exciting.
That seems to be, that's a number one issue thing we just get now.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the first issue, you will not know what it is that it's going to be about. Just deal with it.
I liked it, though. I did. It wasn't my pick, but I liked it.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I'm right with you. So, Connor, you're a big fan of manga and Dragon Ball Z, right?
Oh, for sure.
Well,
I know some of those words.
This week saw the release of No One Left to Fight, number one, by Aubrey Sitterson on writing in Fico Osseo, a name which has quickly gone up to some of my favorite names in comics.
You better have a good FICO score if your name is Fico Osseo.
That's a good point. I was a little worried about reading this. Because I don't know if you listen, if people at home listen to the show, I interviewed Aubrey. Aubrey's a friend of mine. I like him a lot. Because of him, I will be taking my children to WWE SmackDown this coming week.
Mm.
So yeah, no, that's a true thing. On the other hand, I don't really have any connection with any of the things that spawned this material. I know that Aubrey loves Dragon Ball Z, but as he is slightly younger than me, the age of my younger brother, I believe, who loved Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, so I was going to assume that he is of the next age bracket down.
Yes.
Because that's a whole, I mean, there's cultural interest. We're just not, you know, that's like your Power Rangers generation kind of thing.
Like, yes.
We were too old for that. I don't know anything about Pokemon. I know nothing about Dragon Ball Z. I know nothing about Power Rangers. I don't like Napoleon Dynamite.
And our manga knowledge is very, very slight.
Right. Unless you're talking about Cup Noodle, which I could do all day.
Obviously.
Not anymore.
The comic book. That reference is so old that even longtime listeners are like, what the hell was that about? There was a manga about the making of Cup Noodle, and Ron specifically talked about it incessantly for years.
We all read it and liked it. We did a show about it.
Yes, true.
Anyway, the point is, I was actually, you know, on a light week going to read this book, and then you told me what it was about, or at least the influences, and I was like, yeah, I don't need to read it.
Unless it was a patron pick, you were like, I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's just, this is not my deal.
I don't think it is, and I don't think you're wrong about that. So what was interesting here is that it really doesn't look or feel like any of the other comic books that are out right now from a mainstream perspective. It's definitely not trying to be a superhero book in other clothing. It is not, you know, a genre twist. Mm-hmm. It is original thing. It is. It's all original. They're new characters and everything, but it does wear its influences on its sleeve to a certain extent. And I think the art and the coloring show that. The beginning, basically, it's hard. This is the first issue where I'm like, I'm not sure what this is yet. a big video game fighter looking dude wanders into town. Nobody's seen him for a while. He goes to visit his old friend at their like suburban home. She has two kids and a giant crab friend who are all happy to see him. But then her husband comes home and he's not happy to see the guy, and they sort of are eyeballing each other, and then they sort of spar in the backyard, and it gets a little too serious and whatever. And so basically there's a big backstory that has happened and we don't know what that is yet. Mm-hmm. And they can do the Hadouken, you know, like to create energy and fight at each other, and they're not trying to hurt each other, but there's a thing going on. So you get the sense like they were rivals in the past. And it like parts of this read and look a lot like Street Fighter. I think the art's actually great. The FICO score, who has excellent credit.
FICO score.
This is terrible what I'm doing. It's terrible. From what I can tell, I think he colored it because I don't see any other credits in here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good looking. Like the colors are really bold and bright, and there's pinks and blues and greens all over the place. But it fits really well. It's really nicely colored too, and well drawn. And the facial acting is really good. And these little fight sequences are rad. And there's like mm-hmm. a ton of imagination and design going on. It's like a whole new colorful world. And all that's really good. I mean, I was actually really struck by sometimes when you get a book from a smaller publisher that is a creator-owned thing that has no attachment to it, and they bring in an artist that you've never heard of, sometimes they have some working to do.
Mm-hmm.
Dude is fully formed. And I thought that was really impressive. Just to sort of pick a guy out of sort of more or less nowhere that I've heard of and have them be able to come on and create this whole thing and have it be exciting and dynamic is really cool. So mm-hmm. But to really give you a full accounting, I need to read the next one.
Interesting.
You know, but from what I can tell, it is what it is, and it makes no bones about that. And I'm guessing that if you are 4 to 6 years younger than me, this will resonate with you quite a bit more than me.
Probably.
Yes. But I'm going to read the next one. There's something here, and I'm hoping it pays off a little bit. And maybe I will just expand my horizons a little bit. I'm not saying I'm going to go watch all of Dragon Ball Z.
You're definitely not.
I'm definitely not. I do have the feeling if I was younger and I'd watch it, I would very much like it.
Sure.
My brother really liked it.
Sometimes the cultural touchstones aren't there.
Yeah, I think that's got part of it. But if all those things that I just said to you sound like things that you like, you should check it out. You should definitely check it out. For sure.
New number one from Image Comics, Sea of Stars number one, written by Jason Aaron and Dennis Hallam, formerly Hopeless, art by Stephen Green, Rico Renzi on colors, Jared K. Fletcher letters. Aaron and Hallam have written together, right? I can't remember.
They're both from Kansas City. They came right, up they, at they, the same
at
scene.
At one point,
same
they
time.
Had co-written a book together. I can't remember what it was. I couldn't think of it while I was reading this book.
I don't know. I know they were friends. That's all I knew.
Yeah. I assume that. I mean, I don't know, but I assume Aaron helped the plot because it didn't read like a Jason Aaron book.
I don't know, but I do have to, and I'm sorry to do this, I do have to recuse myself a little bit again.
Okay.
Stephen Green's a friend of mine. I've done pitches with him. Like, he's drawn stuff I've written. I think he's awesome. He has been hanging around forever. He worked on Mignolaverse stuff for a little while. He did some sort of Hellboy stuff. He's a great writer. And so years ago when him and I were working on something, he told me, he's like, yeah, Jason Aaron just reached out to me. I was like, that's because you've got the stuff. And it took a really long time to come out, but I was really happy to see it. Like,
well, and the art is incredible.
It's really awesome. Isn't he good? It's another one of those guys, good. Fully formed. Like, came out, and I was like, oh, sure, I'll work with you.
Like, yeah, no, this reads like a real veteran comic art.
I mean, he's been drawing for you know, probably 10 years now, but, you know, just right. He's not known.
Right. Well, he should be. He's very good. He's a lot better than a lot of people working on pretty big mainstream books.
Yeah, for sure.
So this is a story of basically a space delivery man mm-hmm. who is taking his son to work on today as he delivers items from one planet to another and has to safely navigate the stars. And he gets attacked on his route by a space monster that crushes his ship. And the dad and the son are separated, and it's basically like, it seems to be from the ending, that, you know, dad's quest to find his son, son's quest to survive and maybe fight his dad, who doesn't know his dad's alive. And also the son has some strange ability to survive and swim in space without gear.
Yeah. I really liked everything about this, except I think it was first issue thing. So like, I'm not sure what the story's going to be from here.
Other than reuniting, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cold, which it's not really, this has been all the first issues. This is how they are now. So, but it's hard to speak to it. Like, is this good? It's interesting. I'm definitely going to read the next one. The visual style of this thing, imagination-wise, is off the chart. I don't know
Jason Aaron loves the idea of space as sea. He did it in Thor.
Yeah. Sharks and whales and everything.
And treats and ships as boats. And it's this is called Sea of Stars, and it's all like that. Yep. They basically could have been eaten by sea monster. And it looks like a giant squid.
I really liked the science fiction combined with blue collar worker. Like, like his mom's gone. I'm sorry, you got to come with me to work. But, you know, we're just going to go this way. Well, can we go see something interesting? No, we got to do the job.
I'm working here, kid.
Yeah. And I know that I was going to say hopeless, but Dennis Hallam, who's decided to use his real name, like, he's really good at writing parent stuff, basically. I've seen it. And you know, kids and teenagers we've seen he's really good at. You know, Jason Aaron is great at all sorts of things, but, you know, he's an exemplary plotter. He's got a huge imagination. Like, the combination of all of these things with, I mean, the imagery of the sort of space stuff is out of control. This must have been so much fun, you know, for an artist to just think of all of these different crazy things that he can draw. You know, the two little aliens that at the end that sort of meet the kid and they kind of want to eat him, but the one guy's like, well, hold on. You know, it's a little reminiscent of like some of the better parts of Saga. You know, there's a little of that going on here. It's a lot of good
things.
It's a
little Saga, it's a little Fear Agent, it's a little Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna read it. I just didn't blow my socks off. I was hoping it would, but I'm definitely intrigued enough to continue reading. For sure.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where I am with it.
It looks beautiful, though. I mean, it really is. That was the strength.
And the Rico Renzi colors are great. I'm sure it's digital, but there's bits of it that are just made to sort of look like watercolor. And the way that they rendered, like, the energy sail on the top of the ship, you know? It's just one of those things.
It was one of the best looking books this week, for sure.
It is one of those things where, like, you know how the Millennium Falcon's supposed to look junky? But it looks really cool. This ship's like that. Like, I think it's supposed to be sort of junky and working class, but it looks really cool.
The thing is, if you are living in a world with a lot of spaceships, then a junky ship is a junky ship. If you're living in the real world with no spaceships, then any spaceship, no matter how junky, is cool by default.
Yep.
Captain America and the Invaders, Bahamas Triangle, number one. I assume you didn't read this.
Nope.
This was one of those, like that Peter David Hulk comics.
I thought it was a reprint.
It's a one-shot story written by Roy Thomas, legendary Marvel writer Roy Thomas, drawn by legendary artist Jerry Ordway. And this was definitely the mix for my pick of the week if I had one. It's a World War II story. It's one of Cap's earliest missions. He steals the Triangle Shield. In fact, it's his first mission where he's busting up the Bund in America, and he gets called to a special assignment because President Roosevelt is going to the Bahamas, quote unquote, on a fishing trip, but he's actually going to meet with Edward the Eighth and his American wife, who have been sent to become to be the governors of Bahamas to get away from the Nazis because they were Nazi sympathizers.
That's Wallace, true.
Edward and Wallace, and so you get Jerry Ordway drawn FDR meeting with Edward and Wallace, and then while that's happening, a pre-hooded Baron Zemo attacks the compound. Because he wants to bring Edward and Wallace back to Europe because they're going to be installed on the throne once Hitler takes over. And as an added bonus, he's going to kill Roosevelt. He didn't even know he was going to be there. But as it turns out, Cap and Jim Hammond are both secret guards. And so this is their first team up. And then there's a little secret edition of Namor, traditional awesome Namor.
Nice.
All drawn by Jerry Ordway. And they, of course, stop the attack and save the day. And they're not quite the invaders yet, but they realize they got something going here. It was a great little one-shot. It was, you know, 30 pages. Roy Thomas is people, young listeners may not know, one of the most important comics writers of all time.
Oh yeah.
And was known, the Invaders was kind of his comic for forever.
Yeah.
And Jerry Ordway is one of those great guys who follow, you know, style fell out of favor maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, but still has it, man. Still has it. And also draws the Human Torch like he should be with all those lines on his body.
Oh, that's correct.
Yeah. This is something you must read after the show.
Okay.
Will you, do. This is the, I'm a little bummed because this punches all of your buttons.
All right. I'm going to make sure I have that ready to go here.
I love my Mac Weldon. I wore them. I had a big day this week, really long 12-hour work day. And what did I go for? My Mac Weldon.
Obviously.
Underwear. Because it was gonna keep me right for the whole day. It was going to keep me comfortable. I was sweating a lot, and that helps with the Mac Weldon, with your antimicrobial fabrics. It's just a great product. So when I have a big day, when I have an important activity, I make sure I find that. My favorite one's my red pair. I've got a couple, you know, I've got many pairs, but I always pull the red one out on a big day. It's not like my lucky pair, but it's like my, I need the red pair today.
I got you. Situation. I'm down.
And the reason why all that works is because Mac Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabric, simple shopping. Shopping's easy. The website's great. Great products. It's easy to find. Easy to get multiple views of what you're looking at. It's a nice, pleasant experience. Mac Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear or socks or shirts or undershirts or hoodies or sweatpants you will ever wear. I've got it's holiday weekend. I'll probably spend one of those days fully in the sweatpants. Not sure which one yet, but it'll be a comfortable day when I choose that one. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they'll still refund you the money, no questions asked. That means they've got confidence in their products. And as we talked about before, there are two new products, the Ace Pants and the Radius Pants. One of the Ace is the one I was just talking about, the sweatpant, which is completely comfortable. And the Radius Pants are really comfortable. They're almost like those, you know, they talk about dresses being daytime, nighttime dress.
Yeah.
Like you can, this is a pant that you can wear in comfort, or like if you're doing work outside, or you can also wear it, you can wear it out on a plane or out.
I did. I traveled across the country in those. Worked very well for me. There are zippers though. I did have to get checked. There were some zippers, but that's a trade off because also that keeps your stuff in your pockets when you're sitting down. You don't want that to fall out in the airplane seat, and that's the source of my major anxiety on a plane. Is that I'm going to walk away?
Really, really a big deal.
Yeah. That's true.
So, how do you get in on this? Great underwear, great pants, great shirts, comfortable hoodies. Well, you go to MacWeldon.com to get 20% off your first order. Enter promo code IFanboy. We've been talking about it for a long time. We believe in the products. They're great products. If you want to treat yourself, if you want a little luxury in your life, in your nether regions or your shirt area, it's called your chest. promo code IFanboy.
I think that they need to adopt what you said. Is that it keeps you right.
Keeps you right.
Oh, that's...
I watched the first season of The Wire in a week.
Yeah, that's really good.
Rewatched the first season of The Wire. Obviously, I've seen it before. Yeah. But was Old Man Quill number 7 called Way Down in the Hole?
Yeah, that's why I wrote it there.
Is that also why you picked it?
No, I didn't notice until I was writing the script. I just saw that and I was like, oh, I'll write that down.
Superman, up in the sky, number 1. Tom King, Andy Kubert, this is the... general release of the Walmart exclusive story, the first one. Bendis also did Batman, so we'll see when that comes out. But all everybody who cried about not being able to read this can now shut up.
Okay, so couple of preambles. We're going to keep this one short. One, when I did that interview with Tom that was recently released here, he had mentioned this, and I had not thought of it at all. In fact, I didn't even know about it as a thing, but he said something about I was really proud of the Superman story I did. And so... given, you know, all the stuff that he's written, I thought, oh, that'll be really interesting to read. And I did not know this was coming out, and it just did. So it was, I was excited to read it. Part two of this is that I genuinely, literally do not understand why people are mad about them trying to sell comics at Walmart.
Yeah. I mean, that's just...
There's not a shortage of material at your comic shop. There's not a shortage of stuff that comic shops can sell. It's
the same when adult comic fans get mad when they make products for kids. It's like if everything is not for them and available to them at all times, then they take it as a slight.
So that being said, I think I expected it to be more all ages than it was. And it if wasn't. This was just a full-on great superhero Superman comic book.
Yes. I'm assuming your trouble was with the art by Andy Kubert. He is my preferred Kubert, but even then, you know, as he has aged into veteran status, his style is his characters are all a bit chunkier.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind that. I like that part. I did have somebody, I had a pro who shall not be named, point out to me that he can't draw characters from the bottom up. All his character, like if you look throughout it, all the faces are lowered. So the chins are down and not up, the way that you would take a selfie.
Right.
And I can't not see it. There's one panel in here where he sort of draws Superman from below. But even that, I kept looking at it, and I was like, it's weird. And that's on page 14 of your digital reader. I still get mixed up which Kubert I like. I think I like the other one more than
you
this.
Adam.
Adam,
who does Captain America. For Andy, it's fine. Everyone has their own flavor of ice cream.
I like this. This one was inked by Sandra Hope, and I really liked the inks. I thought that they came out really well. Color by Brad Anderson. You know, when you get that blue and that red right, it's hard to have it not look good.
This is very much a Tom King story in which a young girl has been kidnapped off planet by a criminal using a bootleg Zeta Beam, which I love that concept.
Yes.
And Clark has got stuck in Clark's craw. You know, of all the things he could be worried about, one kidnapped little girl is sort of below his purview, and he can't get out of his head and decides to do something about it. And I really loved that.
I love that Batman was Batman's like, you gotta look into this.
I loved the scene where he tries to pitch the story to Perry White as a newspaper story. Mm-hmm. That was great. Perry's rising anger. And then I love that this was so fully ensconced in the DCU. You've got Batman, you've got Wonder Woman, you got Green Lantern, I think Flash at one point maybe.
The one page with Green Lantern was a fantastic page.
Adam Strange.
Like they're just talking, like there's a dinosaur attacking and they're trying to stop it. And it has nothing to do with the conversation that they're having. And it's all about the Zeta Beam or the Rannians. They're the worst.
Yeah.
I love that kind of thing. It was awesome.
This was great.
It really was.
The art, if it had been a different artist, I might have been really exciting. But I really liked the story a lot. I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. And it's an interesting and fun Superman story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was good. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this Kubert, this Andy, I think he does a good cape.
I like. Yeah, the cape. He's a good artist.
He is. I mean, he'd have to be. It would be pathetic if he wasn't.
You're pathetic, Kubert.
No, he is, but he's not. Is the point? The Wildstorm number 24. This is the last issue of it, and Warren Ellis, John Davis Hunt. Steve Buccoletto on colors. I've loved this book. I've loved this all the way through. I've got a thing about the Wildstorm universe when it's written by really good writers and obviously drawn by really good artists. That's always going to be the case. But specifically, if they can tailor the stories to something, it doesn't feel like they're not trying to ape. Like when Rob Liefeld comes out with the new Youngblood, it always feels like Youngblood used to feel. When you can amp this up a little bit, you know, and put some quality to it, it's a really great universe. We've seen Alan Moore do it.
I think we should acknowledge, and I'm not being a snarky asshole here, that it came out and it finished, which is not always assumed with a Warren Ellis project.
Well, here's the thing, though. I was looking forward to it finishing, and at the end of last issue, I thought, this isn't going to finish next issue. So really what this is going to lead into is more Authority comics.
Mm.
And they don't really say who's going to be doing them, but you know, this whole thing set up the
Mark
Authority
Miller.
and nope. But there's gonna be more. Like they basically this stopped the Stormwatch IO war and then led to the formation of, you know, like the Wildcats to a certain extent, but really the Authority, and it's this new, slightly different version of them, which is pretty interesting because Warren Ellis created those guys too. So he's like, I'm going to do it again, slightly differently. And that is interesting because, you know,
he's got his own little corner franchise here where he reinvents his old work.
That's if you can sell that to him, that's kind of amazing. I really liked it, though, and so I'm going to read more for sure. It was great.
How are you going to feel when he reinvents Transmetropolitan?
I'd read that. I mean, if you think about all the stuff that he would have had to say in the late 90s to, you know, then compared to how it would be now.
I wouldn't want to read it.
I started reading Transmetropolitan.
I would, but I wouldn't want to.
Right. No, I mean, he shouldn't do that for everything, but I think that one of the things
I'm not saying he's going to. I'm just.
No, I know. But just as a theoretical, these characters, these Wildstorm characters, are really. They're very malleable for whatever reason.
He should reinvent Fel. Or.
Nope.
Just do the next issue.
I don't care. That's an old one.
Postal Deliverance number one, Top Cow. I took a flyer on this issue written by Brian Edward Hill, drawn by Rafael Ienco. A lot of Italians in this episode. This was a series where the name seemed vaguely familiar, and I saw Brian Hill's name on it, so I said, all right, let me check it out. And this is the second volume of this story. There was a postal.
He did postal for years.
Yeah, there was a postal series before. This is a new volume of it. And I never read the original one. So this issue does a pretty good job of explaining the world and everything. And also I looked it up because I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy. And so I did read about it. Basically, it's a little town in which ex-cons can come live freely, but you have to pay a hefty fee to move there and also follow the very strict rules. And the new guy who moved in this issue is not into following the rules. And so there's problems. It's very much, as we've talked about, a cold open issue. In which the new guy moves to town, comes into conflict with the people of the town because he won't follow the rules and gets in a bar fight even though violence is not allowed. And now at the end says things are going to change here, so he's going to some sort of resurrection in the town. I enjoyed it. The art by Rafael Ienco was interesting, really good in parts, a little wonky in other parts. He's sort of a very realistic style. Mm-hmm. It seems to be a pure crime story, and. I might check the next one out. I do like Hill's point of view a lot.
He has a good point of view. Are you going to go back and read all of Postal?
Probably not.
No.
But the thing is, you don't necessarily need to here, which is good. And
that's good, yeah.
You know, it's just there's just a bunch of people in the town dealing with some bad stuff. I liked it.
So we opened with a number 7. About a bunch of number ones, then talked about a 24, which was the end of a series. And now to close this out, I'm going to talk to you about Crowded number 7. See that?
Good job.
It's a little 7 thing. Crowded, written by Christopher Zavella, with art by Roe Stein on their other issues. And then this one was also helped with Ted Brandt. I'm not really sure what the division of labor was. 7 brings us back from a little hiatus. The idea here is just... catch people up. Is a crowdfunding murder platform. You need somebody killed. A bunch of people
that
can
is
pitch
both
in.
Frighteningly,
yeah,
plausible, and also people would absolutely do that.
Right, and then there is also a sort of an Uber for bodyguards to save you from when people won't come to kill you. And there's a whole set of rules in this world that exists. So this is 50, 75 years in the future, 100 years in the future, something like that. It's that kind of sci-fi, the speculative, but over the top. Not unlike Transmetropolitan, actually.
Sure.
I really enjoyed this series, the first sort of 6 of them. And so when it came back, I was pretty excited about it. I think Roe Stein's art is great. Some of the pages were not as great. And I was a little disappointed by that because I think that it's a lot of art. The story is still on point. It's a really interesting. Sabella's really a really strong writer. It's really fun. I would like to have the art not change. It wasn't even that it was bad. It was just that it was different. But it's back. It's still good. Let's go.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. But if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy and you sign up, everyone can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, the patron pick was The Walking Dead 193. Written by Robert Kirkman, art by Charlie Adlard, with gray tones by Cliff Wraithburn, and art letters by Russ Wooten. And it's the final issue of The Walking Dead, as I'm sure you read on the internet. Robert Kirkman dropped this on people with no explanation and no advance warning. That's not true about explanation. It was a 6-page essay in the back that explained it, but no advance warning. And, in fact, fake solicitations for the next issue and the issues beyond. You have to admire the commitment. So before we get into it, listeners of the show know I don't read this in issues. I've never read The Walking Dead in issues. And so I appreciate there was a debate about whether or not to force me to read this. And I appreciate those who said, hey, maybe we shouldn't be jerks. However, those people lost the battle.
Jerks win! Jerks win!
So I had a choice. My choice was just read this last issue or and then thus ruin my entire 10 years plus reading this book, or read everything I had been missing because I had fallen way behind on the trade. So I read 24 issues of The Walking Dead on Thursday.
Happy 4th.
169 through 193. 193 was like 2.5 sized. On the one hand, you know, it reads very quickly. It's always read very quickly, so it wasn't that bad. But it was a lot of Walking Dead reading I had to do because of this patron pick. Because I wasn't going to compromise. You know, I didn't want to be into this series for so long and then have then read the final issue without having read the previous 24.
On the other hand, though, like, you know, done.
You could have, I mean, you could have done it, and we'll talk about the story in 1 second. You could have absolutely done it. It wouldn't have been as impactful if I had just jumped ahead and read this issue, though, and not read the previous, basically 2 years worth of comics, because a lot of important things happened in it. So this is the final issue. Robert Kirkman wrapped up the Invincible last year.
Bobby Hollywood strikes again.
And wraps up One Walking Dead here. I really liked it.
I liked it a lot.
This was my pick of the week by far.
Yeah, I think
he's really good at Invincible. The final issue was also pick of the week. He's really good at wrapping up his stories, and that's a really hard thing to do.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's really thoughtful about it, and he really cares about it. And he, you know, I just made my little Bobby Hollywood joke, but the fact is, it's been years and years and years now, and the comics have gotten no short shrift.
He could have stopped writing this very easily many years ago.
Yeah, and he didn't. And he did it out of respect for the material and the craft and the readers, and I think that comes through. That's really
He also wouldn't have done it the way he did it here if he didn't have that respect. He could have very easily turned it into a big media blitz and pumped up the pre-sales.
Yeah.
And, you know, made it a big event. Instead, he dropped it in like the opposite of Die Die Die, which he put out without any advance warning either. Like, clearly, if it was just about the business, he would, like, someone asked me, why didn't they promote this? This would have been a big deal. I was like, because he wanted it to be a surprise. And that's, if he didn't care, he wouldn't have done it.
Well, also, but, you know, then the other side of that is that he is in a really unique position. And I say really, really, A, that really unique is redundant and stupid to say. But B, he's in a unique position in that it's creator-owned book. He's in full control of it. He's a partner at Image, so he doesn't even get pushback on that front. Monetarily, it is significant for him, but he can do everything in a way that is what is best for the comic book, the creators, and the readers. And I can't think of many other situations, especially that have such a large fan base, where you could do that. And I think, I mean, basically, it's respectful of the medium, and it's amazing. And the essay at the end, we're not even talking about the book that much, but the essay at the end was really enjoyable to read, and sort of his thought process that he got to it. You know, there's nothing is surprise, nothing. And we talk about this all the time. The 3 month solicitation, and he's always with his solicitations. He's always had them have no information. Like
his solicitations were like the Mad Men previews for next week.
Yeah, and then, you know, he took it even further. You know, they don't preview these issues. Like we don't get comps of them. They're not. They don't exist.
Right.
You have to buy them. You can't. No one is getting this ahead of time to know what's happening. And he created an event out of it, but it was an event that was earned. And then, mm-hmm. So on top of all that, like, I'm really impressed by that. And on top of all that, it was a good wrap up. It was a nice bit of comic book storytelling. Again,
what I liked about it was that, you know, this is the premier horror comic,
right?
Maybe of all time, probably of all time. It's certainly the most successful indie book of all time. I'd imagine it's generated more revenue than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Those would be the top one and two. But
are we counting merchandising? Because no.
Well,
they sold that to Nick. I don't know.
I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar property at this point. So it's one and two. Merchandising could edge Turtles over Walking Dead. It doesn't matter. It's one of the top most important things.
Big deal.
But in this issue, the book changes from a horror book to a Western.
Yes, it did.
And I loved it.
Yes.
So we jump into the future, as in the last issue, you know, very famously, Rick dies, gets murdered by the son, the squealing son of the governor of Commonwealth.
You were spoiled by that, right? You knew.
Well,
that.
I knew he was going to die, and so as soon as I met the son, mm-hmm. I was like, "That's the guy who's going to kill him."
Uh-huh.
because it would be the most annoying person to kill him, and it was.
Right.
But it made sense. Totally made sense. Anyway, so the point is we now jump ahead. At the end of that issue, they were all were returning to Alexandria for Rick's funeral, and then we jump ahead now to the future in which Carl is an adult, and he's married to, is it Lily? The blonde girl, the other blonde girl he was not dating when he was younger.
Sophia.
They have a daughter. Sophia. I don't know where Lily came from. Sophia. They have a daughter named Andrea. They live in a western town. They're basically all safe. They're cordoned off. There's not as many zombies anymore. But Maggie's spoiled brat of a son, Herschel, has a traveling zombie show, and brought it to town. One of them escaped, and Carl had to kill it because it was outside his house. But now they're considered valuable property and not scary monsters. So he gets put on trial for it, and it was a. I thought it was terrific. I thought it was a great wrap up. It was very much one of those kind of 6 feet under kind of wrap ups where you see the future, not fully to the end, but we see how everyone has happy lives or not happy lives, lived or died. We get a very much a wrap up on characters both new and old that we've met along the way, and I loved it. I really was impressed by it.
Yeah, it was pretty delightful. I mean, if I had any problem with it, it was just that. I didn't remember who a lot of the characters were because I pretty much stopped reading it a while back. And so...
You mean you didn't binge 2 years worth of comics and never had them all fresh in your head when you read it?
There was no way I would have done that in a billion years, and that's why we're different people. When Judge Hawthorne, I was like, wait, is that Michonne? And so I had to look up, like, oh, yeah, that's her last name. That's her. You know, I kind of remembered who the girl was, and then when he went out on the ranging exercise with the other girl, I was like, oh, she was the...
What, his ex.
Yeah, that girl he slept
with. She was the daughter of the one of those horrible
Whisperers?
One of the many horrible groups.
Is that what they were?
The Whisperers, yeah.
Yes, and I thought their relationship was really interesting. Like, I like that Carl grew up in Rick's image.
Yep.
And it was a Western, it was totally a Western thing. And I think that one of the ways that you can get away with all his little wrap-ups here is that by doing it in that Western format, it has a different set of expectations. You can be a little more romantic. You can be a little more, I don't use the word cliche, but it kind of works. You can do those things in this context, I think, in a way that you maybe, you know, couldn't in the straight-up horror book. And also, I like that, I mean, it's a larger metaphor, really, but I like that he gave it a happy ending. Like, he's originally, I wasn't going to give it a happy ending. I wouldn't. It would be a creepy ending, and then, you know, all the zombies would be coming over the hill or whatever. But he didn't. He said, I just worked for this for so long that why not give them a bit of... And
It
did need that, but also I like that as a metaphor for who Robert Kirkman is, mm-hmm. like, we know that when he started this book, he had leveraged himself to such an extent, you know, that it was genuinely scary for him. You know, yeah. he was deeply in debt. He did this thing. Nobody thought it would be what it was. And it became this huge, like, he's got a happy ending.
Yeah. I mean, that'll certainly change your view on life.
Right. And that gives it a it's hopeful, you know. Yep. And also, there were still even some sort of social issues throughout here. But it wasn't so on the nose, you know, that I was like, all right, I know what you're trying to. He doesn't work like that. But he's still saying something. The thing with the you know, the Romers being, you know, property or being a thing in a show and how, you know, however many years later people are already starting to forget, you know, that is relevant, but it's not spoon-feeding you.
Or people who were not alive really during it, the kids who are all like, this is lame. It's like, yeah, none of you had this fight for your lives.
Yeah, and that's, assholes. You know, that's like not knowing
I also like,
history.
You know, the idea of it being a Western makes sense because they basically had to restart society, and you can't restart society from the place you were at before. You don't have the technology, you don't have the materials anymore. So they're basically starting society over. So
that dawned on me as I was reading it, and then sort of the stormtrooper guys show up, and you're like, all right, yeah, this isn't it's not an alternate take. It's sort of what happened.
It's just that, you know, like we have the materials. We start from this point, and this point we can do what the old West did. We have the wooden houses, and we have trains, and we have. You know, slightly, some more technology, but it's not basically like they're jumping into the sci-fi future. It's we have to start over. And,
they have the plans, but they don't have the manufacturing.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. I liked that everybody wasn't like great. You know, Maggie may have fucked up, and her kid is unpleasant, and you know, not everyone's happy. It was good. It was really good, and it's impressive. You know, it's an impressive run, 193. it's nothing to sneeze at, even if he never made it to 300 like his goal was. But
not a round number. It was...
Yeah.
Jeff Parker made a joke on Twitter. He's like, the real story here is that he managed to not finish at 200, which is what every, you know, OCD comic creator would have gone for at least.
Right. One more. Well, he says it in the back. He's not even writing for the trades, he's writing for the compendiums.
Yeah.
And so they figured out how many issues they needed for another compendium volume. And that, you know, people might scoff at that, but that's the reality of doing business.
And he's smart. That's smart.
And it also didn't affect the story in any negative way.
No, not at all.
So, Walking Dead, first of all, clap for Robert Kirkman. We're very impressive. Also, Charlie Adler, who did every issue but the first six plus a random one in the middle. Really, really impressive performance from him, too. And good work by everybody involved. It's weird now that these books are over.
Yeah. It's weird that we might see Charlie Adler do something again.
We just always assumed The Walking Dead would just be there in the background.
Yeah, it's weird.
So
I might have to.
I mean, that was one of the books from the beginning when we started iFanboy. That was at least we started the podcast. That was, you know, one of those constant books. We interviewed Robert Kirkman so many times in the early days.
Yeah.
So it's strange. Things change as you get older. Let's do ratings on Walking Dead number 193 out of 5. I'm gonna give it a 5.
I'm going to give it a 4.5.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Sticking with it?
Yeah, sure. I'll read the next one.
Okay. So patreon.com/ifanboy, that's where you can go. You can vote to add a picture to the book to the rundown if you are a patron.
Yeah, if you like this kind of thing, you want to vote, you want to have a say in that. I really think that the folks who have gone to patreon.com/ifanboy are getting value out of it. I think they're having fun. There's a little community that's grown up around them. We're getting there's content that comes out from it. There's the book splits and the talk splits that we do. There's the patron pick part of the show. There's the patron powers. It's made our show better. And so we want to thank everybody for doing that. We have other stretch goals in there. You can go to patreon.com/ifanboy to check what those are. The next one would be a non-comics media podcast that I don't have time for, but I really would like to do. We made a little headway. And then the other part is that we will upload the missing video shows up onto YouTube. And it's funny because I was looking for something the other day and I was like, I hope this one's up. And it was. And then I looked at it and I went, let's take this one down. That's just me. You can also go and purchase merch in the words of the famous Minutemen, the Mersh. iFanboy.threadless.com. There are now 7 designs up there. It's proving difficult to find another one that we are comfortable with doing.
Well, as we talked about last week, we did find a preliminary design for one, submit it to our graphic designer. I don't know when it'll be done or if we'll even decide to do it, but there has been movement.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's happening, but it's slower.
Yeah.
You can also go to ifanboy.com/support. If you want to deal with any of that stuff, you could send something our way via PayPal. That is how the internet economies of these sort of smaller entertainment properties like ours get by. For sure. So that's all that stuff you can do. And finally, there's ifanboy.com/Amazon. You will find links to our Booksplode books, such as our last one, which is escaping me at the moment.
What did Booksplode? The last one was...
Oh, God. Daredevil.
Daredevil Born Again.
Born Again. Yeah, you should get that. Buy it through our link or anywhere. Just get it. Steal it if you need to. You'll find a link to Amazon.com there as well. And if any purchases you make through that will help the show out. So thank you to everybody who does that. I know we say we appreciate it, but I feel like I can't say that enough. Mm-hmm. And I want you to, like, I sincerely mean that. I think it's amazing. Thank you.
So we also like to thank patrons who give it to $5 or higher level. They get their own superpower live on the show. Take it away, Josh.
Caleb Peters. Mm-hmm. That's a Western name.
Mm-hmm.
Caleb Peters came up with a gang of rustlers. He can stay up late. There's no consequences. Stay up as late as you want. Go to sleep. When you wake up, when it's time for you to wake up in the morning, you're going to be fine. You're going to be refreshed. There's so no...
For 1 hour, he'll be fully rested and refreshed and not feeling any consequences of not slept.
He just needs to turn the clock off and turn it back on.
Hmm.
Like our friend Dodge.
And he just... So no ill effects. His body is
it's
healthy.
It's as if he's gotten a full, restful, non-apneatic 9 hours of sleep.
Wow.
In the perfect position. All is well.
Is it only at night, or can it, like, if he takes a nap, what happens then?
I'm going to say that he needs to sleep any amount before it is the prescribed time for him to wake up.
Okay.
You know what I'm getting at?
So it's a nighttime thing.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Okay. Yeah. He can stay up late. That's the power.
Right.
There's no like, oh, I get to bed. I got to work in the morning. It's none of that. I got some stuff I got to work on. I'll get enough sleep. Don't worry about it.
Inda O'Driscoll can point at anyone and silence them.
Literally?
Yes.
Just so it's a sound thing.
Just be quiet.
I feel like we've done that before.
That's.
But I also have fantasies about that.
Power. We need more people in the world who can point and silence them. Now, not forever. They are, you know, once they leave the presence of Inda O'Driscoll, mm-hmm. they can make noise again.
Okay.
So, for instance, just picking a random hypothetical situation, if at 4 a.m. somebody outside your apartment building decided to shoot off fireworks, you could look out the window, point, and silence it all.
No, so we're not silencing people; we're silencing everything.
Everything they're doing makes no noise.
Hmm.
They are silent.
Do you get the sense that neither of us feel as rested as we wish we were?
Motherfuckers.
O'Driscoll is the name of the bad guy gang in Red Dead Redemption 2. I've never seen it.
O'Driscoll's.
Yeah. You know what O means? It means of.
Of Driscoll.
Yeah. There you go. They're in A Handmaid's Tale. Viren Patel, another excellent name. If Viren Patel was ever elected, he would make the best president.
So his power is
to be the best president.
Excellent leadership.
No. Specifically in the office of the president of the United States of America.
What if he's not an American?
And then it's a waste of a power. But if through
some... So he couldn't be the president of General Motors? They have to be...
I'm not saying he'd be bad at it. He'd probably be very good at it. But the best purpose, the pinnacle, if that person was to get into office through some combination of luck and chutzpah, brass, hard work, and honestly, Bob. Providence, however it took, they would be the best president ever. And they would make those changes that would unite everybody, not unlike Bill and Ted.
I believe the whole point of the new movie is they never actually do it.
I thought they did at the end.
Well, I think the point of the movie is that they haven't yet done it as they're in their 50s.
Oh, okay.
Like, you guys need to get on this. I touched my phone with my foot and turned on Siri. Jason Smith. I'm sorry, Jason. It's not as this has been a whole show of great names, but Jason Smith sounds like an alias. Jason Smith. So you know how Mary Poppins has a magic bag?
Mm-hmm.
Jason Smith has a magic jacket. And he can open that jacket and pull out anything you need.
Is it still a slim, nice fitting jacket?
Yeah, it looks great. It's just that he reaches in like an inside pocket and pulls out a lamp.
So it's not like my problem I have now where anytime I put my phone in any of my pockets, it looks like I'm smuggling something.
No, it looks great. The lines are all clean.
Oh.
You can't tell there's anything in there, but there could be a Buick if that's what's needed in that situation.
It's the Doctor Who phone box of jackets.
Right. Magic jacket.
Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Is the jacket contemporary or is it like a timeless style? Because
it's a classic because he's got to be able to wear it all the time. Yeah.
Because that is tricky. Because I have jackets that 10 years ago I loved and now I can't wear that out. Also, it doesn't fit, but still. That's
it also always fits him. That's why it's magic. It always fits perfectly and it has things in it. Whatever's needed at that moment.
That's not bad. I'd
Except
take
for
that.
Currency.
I'm going to assume it's breathable.
Yeah.
Water resistant. Those kinds of things that I also look for in a jacket.
And, you know, it's always clean. He can't take it to the dry cleaners because that was the one time the dry cleaner fell into his jacket.
Yeah.
And never seen again.
A car fell out. Went to check if there was anything in the pockets and got lost in a time loop.
Those are the people who we thank this week for patreon.com/FM. We'll give you the $5 or higher level. If you want your own superpower on the show, you can join up and do that. We are... on pace to finish out this year with all those patrons. Obviously not the new ones, but the old ones. So we thank everyone who's done that.
So we are starting to go long. I think we need to keep this reined in. Okay. Let's want to do the second question, and then we'll save the other one for next time.
You want to do the second question, but keep it reined in.
I see what you're saying. Should we? Well, we're not going to have less time in the future.
Let's just do it.
Okay. Scott said, I would love to get your take on the evolution of the comics media press over the last 15 years. It's such a nutty landscape, and I'm sure that you have thoughts and insights that would be entertaining. What do you miss? What would you like to see change? Just generally, what has been your experience as part of the comics media?
You wanted to end short. There's a lot there.
Okay, just not everybody listening was necessarily around for the whole thing.
That's what I mean. Yeah, we should start there.
We started our website forever ago as a place to just talk about comics because we were
the year 2000.
We had an email list with people, and we thought, oh, we should turn this into a website because back then that was a novel idea. And over time, we grew it into. We would just post things we liked, basically. And nobody really read it or looked at it. And it was like two people who would come. And we just did it for our own fun. We started the podcast in 2005, late 2005. People started showing up. And then we began the earnest work of turning it into... I wouldn't say it was a news site. I think we did some things that were like
It news. Was news and opinion. It was a community...
Comics culture. I mean,
yeah, it was a news site. We definitely posted the news, talked about the news, but it wasn't you're strictly like the way things are now. It's very different than what. There's nothing out there now that does what we did.
No, but over that time, you know, we came up with a lot of ideas about how we thought a comic book website should be.
But also, we you know through that work became quote unquote legitimate members of the comics media. It was for however many years of Josh and I's full time job. 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would hesitate to call
comics like journalism
media anything more than media. It's not journalism. There are no comics journalists, in my opinion. It's entertainment media. You know, it's mostly it's like Entertainment Tonight for those of you who were old enough to remember that show when it was relevant. It's Entertainment Weekly. It's discussing things that you're excited and enthusiastic about, and occasionally. Falling backwards into something that you might skirt on the edge of journalism, but mostly it's not that.
And yeah, we didn't.
Not just us, but everybody.
And we didn't operate under the auspices of being journalists. So we did follow some of those sort of tenets, you know, because of our own sense of right and wrong or, you know, whatever it was. But at the same time, we also did see what was happening all around us. And I think that the interesting thing is what has happened since we stopped doing it. When did we stop doing it? 12?
2013 was when we stopped 13. The website. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we were trying to pay people for a while.
We were paying people.
Were paying people. It wasn't a ton, but it was important to us to be able to do that when we could. Once we lost the ability to do that, we just couldn't keep it up.
It was that plus the time.
Yes.
We had to go back to day jobs.
Yeah.
We couldn't continue the site as we had done it for the last 5 years. We would have taken a step down and we didn't want to do that. So, plus, we just didn't have the time with our day jobs. So, we scaled back to just the podcast. But,
yeah,
I mean, I don't. We talked about this before. I don't really go. I go to like a couple of sites occasionally just to see if anything important is happening. But I don't like go to CBR or Newsarama anymore. And so I don't really have a good sense of what they're doing. Comicbook.com. Our buddy Jim runs that. It seems like most people now are chasing page views as they should be. That's their business model. But it's about, and we learned this doing it ourselves, the most popular content was always the movie and TV content. It was never the comics content. We would post a story about some really great indie book we loved, and it would get less than 10% of the page views that a movie still of a character from an upcoming movie would get.
And then engagement and all of that stuff that happened. And we saw that happening, and you know, I was always
didn't love it.
Yeah, but I was always like, I hate talking about this stuff, but we did it because we had to for a certain extent.
I hate doing recaps. And
we would do, you know, we had guys who we had out doing really good interviews with people, written interviews. Nobody read them.
Yeah, nobody reads written interviews. It's tough. I mean, I'm not complaining about the audience. The audience likes what the audience likes. And what we found was the audience wants to see a photograph of a character in costume on a set of a film rather than they want to read an interview with, like, Jeff Smith or, you know, somebody else who's great. And even somebody like, you know, Scott Snyder. We did an interview with Scott Snyder, and you know, doesn't do as well as here's the latest, first look at Wolverine, yeah. You know? And that was tough. You know, the internal joke was movie stills. What does that family do with movie stills? Because that's what paid the bills. And
that's what people liked, too. That's another thing.
And we would get comic people complain to us, like, why aren't you covering this? Or why, you know, it's like, I'd love to, but we, you know.
If a tree falls in the forest.
We're a business here. We are paying ourselves and people. And we had to juggle what we thought we should cover with what we had to cover to pay the bills. So that's why you still got things that didn't get a lot of page views, because we thought they were important. They were in our interest range. But
so if you play that out, the overall availability of a comic book market of people who are going to come to read your site about comic books, not that big. No one's going to get rich from that. New York Times can't, you know, like on a very large scale, all around media is having a hard time with this. So you can imagine for a smaller site. So the idea of real journalists being paid a livable wage in comics is laughable. You may as well try to invent human flight and invisibility.
It's fan press. It's you know, you do it because you love it, not because, I mean.
So the only people who are going to get really good at it are going to be people who are super, super committed, don't care if they're going to make any money, and really do care, and are also intelligent and capable. And there are a few of those people, but they're not Maureen Dowd. That's not the way I was trying to think about it.
Going to create a professional comics press.
There was a little time where it might, but it's
you,
not.
You only get that when they do work for big outlets like Graham McMillan writes for the Hollywood Reporter, I think, or Variety at one point. He keeps bouncing around. But those kind of people who are freelancing for bigger outlets who cover comics culture because it's tied into Hollywood culture, and really then they're only really covering whatever it is that ties into Hollywood. And you're not going to get like a website where people are making a living wage, and what Josh and I were making worth not a living wage for 5 years. You're not gonna get that. There just isn't revenue in it. There's not enough revenue for most people making comics, and there's not enough revenue for the people talking about making the comics.
And then also, there's no way to. So in that time since then, I was gonna say it's gotten worse, but it's just tended to keep following those trends. So the things that we didn't really want to do that we kind of had to, that has all been amplified, and the other stuff has been left back. But then the other side of it for me, and I think for you too, like, I don't find that I need any of that stuff. It does not enhance my comic book reading. Mm-hmm. The stories about what is coming up, what's the thing that's... So I never know, in a given week, I don't know what a thing is going to be until I read it that week usually, and I prefer that. I don't need all the extra stuff. If for some reason I like something and I read it, then I'm going to go out and I might want to hear what that person has to say, I guess, about it. I would probably just reach out to them and try to get them on the show myself. And because of doing that, I mean, that's a different position than most people.
I mean, you're doing your media work on your Talksplodes.
Yeah.
Which is, that's legitimate, you know, comics media stuff. Yeah. I sort of look back on it with fondness, and there are things I miss, and I liked that culture we had created. I liked the family we had at iFanboy, the people who worked there and the people who figured the site. Like, I do miss that aspect of it. I miss getting a Jimsky column on Sunday night and reading it before it came out, because he always had interesting things to say. And I miss getting seeing whatever Paul's demented mind came up with, and Timmy, you know, his humor stuff. Like, I miss that whole group we had. Yeah. It was a good group. It was a fun time in my life. You know, we were still relatively young and carefree for the most part. So it was, you know, nostalgia wise, it's pretty strong. But like, do I want to sit around and grind out a rewritten press release and have 18 people come tell us how stupid we are in the comments? Not really. I mean, it was also mentally taxing. It was mentally taxing.
Sure.
It totally
was. And I don't pay attention anymore. It just, it doesn't do anything for me in that way. And also, this is one of those things, like I said, it takes a really long time to sort of get past the mentality of being really fanish around things. Like, I've tried to listen to other interview podcasts, and it's a little Chris Farley show, if I can use a very old, like, people are
We've
like,
always try to be fair and treat comics as any other artist.
Yeah. And I think Connor and I are both over the, oh, wow, we're getting to talk to so-and-so. We're getting to do, you know, like yeah. Let's talk about the work. And that's all that I think at the end of all that, that was all that's important. Like, what's great about the work? You know, that we both of us have always said the thing that we got out of most of it, the thing that we're proudest of, the thing that we're happy is like where we really gained an appreciation of comic book art. And I mean art overall, the whole thing.
And that was always sort of the unspoken yes. ethos of the website, too. I mean, if something big happened in the world of comics, we obviously covered it, but like we tried to keep our focus on the work and the page, what was happening in the page, not who got fired or some scandal. Unless it was a really big deal, mm-hmm. we tried to really focus on the page, the art and, in the page, and not the stuff in the background.
And then if that stuff did happen, we would try to focus on what effect that would have on the work. Like, what does that mean for you, the reader?
Right,
because everything else is just speculation. That's speculation. It's a lot of speculation.
I don't envy anyone now having to run a website like that. It's just nope. It's not. It's got to be soul crushing.
I do still get really defensive though when I see pros specifically bemoaning the state of comics journalism as if that was mm-hmm. ever really a thing.
Right, and there's not. I got. We were on some panel and somebody got mad at me because I was like, someone asked about comics journalism. I said, there is no comics journalism. And if there is, it happens by accident. And all the people on the panel who thought considered themselves comics journalists got really mad at me. You can get mad at me if you want. I come from a family who all worked in newspapers their entire lives. There's no one actually like that in comics.
No, because there's no support system for it. And that's the end. Yeah. That's the real answer.
So I take that very seriously.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with being in the media as opposed to being a journalist. There's nothing wrong with covering. People need entertainment. It's not. There's no shame in being an entertainment reporter or entertainment writer. It's people need to relax and not worry about everything all the time. So it's good that they have entertainment, and it's good they have people who are talking about it or analyzing it or alerting them to things. Like, that's all valuable in society.
Helping you appreciate your entertainment.
You're just not going to win a Pulitzer for covering comics.
No,
that's fine. You're not going to win a Pulitzer for covering. You know, TV shows, for the most part.
All right. So there you go. We went on longer than we even should have. I thought it was a good question, though. We haven't really talked about it.
That was a good question.
Write to us at contact@ifanboy.com for more of those questions. Thanks, Scott, for sending that one in. I think he actually approached me on Twitter, and I was like, send the email. We're not doing that.
We don't answer questions on, like, those kind of questions on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, Instagram.
Yep.
You got to email them in.
Yep. Coming up or out now. Is Tom King Talksplode I talked about. I think it's safe to say this was a big deal for people.
Yeah, it's one of our most popular ones ever.
Yep. And people have, I've gotten a ton of great feedback. Obviously I had a really good time doing it. So I will have to bring him back someday, clearly. There was the Booksplode I talked about earlier, Daredevil Born Again, a religious experience of sorts for us. there's an X-Men Dark Phoenix show. You know, we want to talk about, I don't know what journalism is, but it's work. And then Spider-Man Far From Home, which I wish I could have been on, but...
right behind this show, and that was Paul and I. Paul and I did the last two movie shows. Yeah, it's a bummer you weren't able to do it, but that's just the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, I liked it. There you go. There's my spoiler. I liked it a lot. It was a good time. What's up next?
So coming soon, some special edition shows. Booksplode this month. We'll be doing Planetary Book 2, as I announced last week. We're closing the loop. Josh has never actually finished the series, so this will be a fun, interesting thing to talk about. And then, as I said last week, we have penciled in the rest of the year's Booksplodes, but those are all subject to change, which is why we're not going to tell you what they are. But we have an idea what we want to do. But that could change. Also, in August, you'll get a Batman Hush animated brand trust discussion of the next...
I got really scared. I was like, are you going to make me read Hush? Oh, good. No, it's August. They can't be. Oof.
I thought about proposing that for a Booksplode, and I thought you probably would be too grumpy about it.
I would love to talk about how I don't get Jim Lee again.
So that's coming out in August. And then, as we talked also about last week, the next special edition show won't be until the next special edition movie show won't be until later in the year with Joker. But we'll be around with other stuff.
Sorry. Where should they go?
Where can you head over and find all those shows? iFanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can even find a lot of the old writing we just talked about. Some of the formatting might be fucked up because we changed servers and it really messed up some of the old articles. But you can find years and years and years of written content there. Go back and get, it's a real fun time capsule of fandom and what was happening in comics at the time. You can find just hours. You couldn't read it all. That's how much content there is at iFanboy.com. You can also find what the Pick of the Week is before the show comes out by liking Facebook.com/iFanboy and following at iFanboy on Twitter. And also follow at iFanboy Comics on Instagram. That's where you can find the Best of the Week in Panels feature. And at Comic-Con in a few weeks, I'll be there, and I'll be putting a lot of pictures and videos up on there as well. So if you want to check all that out, iFanboy Comics on Instagram. Individually, we are at Jay Flanagan, Twitter, Instagram, at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, you can write a review for us on Apple Podcasts or whatever it is that does podcast reviews or things like that. But I know that's the one place you can do them. Oh, you can leave a star rating on there as well. Or you can just tell people about it. Us telling you to tell people about it has led to more people telling other people about it. That's what I've noticed. So you'll have to hear me keep saying that. But that's how it works. And that works for our show or any show that you like. So I've been listening to Turned Out a Punk, which is an interview podcast with punk folk. And I dig that a lot. See, that was your review. Better. I told my friends about it, all the thousands of you. And that is it. That's what we got. We went over. We do it. We can't. It's my, that one was my fault.
It was your fault. That's fine.
I know.
You're going to pay for it now.
I know. I'm sorry.
All right. So until next week. Yeah, I'm on next week. Until next week, I'm Connor.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.